Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Hi, I'm Kim Kaiser. I'm a minister here, and I'm here to talk to you about what is the common good. So the first thing to remember is that whatever we're talking about is happening right now. It's happening in you as we talk. It's happening in this room. It's happening because what we're talking about is eternal, active, and very present. So pay attention. So the common good. This is an interesting phrase. It's really been at the center of this nation's identity from the very beginning. It's really been the very core of why we sought independence and we're willing to fight for it. So, in the opening paragraphs of the Declaration of Independence, there's these words. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, this was and is a very radical statement, a very bold statement, far beyond the worldly thought of that time and this time. The desire for a common good, that is, a commonly shared vision, a vision that brings good to the individual and the community, is actually an old, old vision. Aristotle, the Greek philosopher, defined the common good this way. The common good is the good proper to and attainable only by the community, yet individually shared by its members. This nation, as a people, chose to follow a vision, the vision of the common good. It energized us, caused us to work together, gave us the hope of a better future for ourselves and each other, and gave us a new vision, a vision of a new possibility for humankind. And in order to follow this vision, at least some of the people in that time and now have to believe it was actually possible. If one doesn't believe a common good is possible, why work to bring liberty and the pursuit of happiness about? If there is no one who believes it's possible, how is it ever going to come into existence? I learned about this sitting in a service like we are now. And the speaker began to talk about the importance of having a vision of possibility. And she said, for instance, if you don't believe that human beings can fly, I don't mean in an airplane, but actually fly, how much effort are you going to put in to learning about it, to actually making it possible, to studying it, to working at it? None, right? And then she said, in the same way, if you don't believe the world can be at peace, completely at peace, how much effort would you put into bringing it about? And when she said that, it really struck me because, in fact, I realized I didn't actually believe that the world could actually be at peace throughout. It just didn't make sense in some way. If you ask me in some statement of belief, I'd say, sure, the world is a peaceful place, etc. But did I believe there could be peace on this planet? I had to look again at a belief that was hidden to me until that moment. And then, as I thought about it and began to consider the possibility of world peace, I realized that our teaching, the science of mind, goes way beyond that. This is from our statement of belief called What We Believe. We believe the ultimate goal of life to be a complete emancipation from all discord of every nature, and that this goal is sure to be attained by all. Stop a moment. Where do you stand on this kind of vision? Freedom from discord of any kind, that includes relationships, that includes internal discord, that includes bodies, that includes nations, a world in which there's no discord at all. Can you imagine what living in such a world would be? Can you imagine that such a world is possible? One teacher of mine says that you must have a greater intention for spiritual practice than just self-improvement. Self-improvement's required. It comes with the package. You're going to improve if you practice spiritual practice. But you're not going to be able to stay with it, says this teacher. You're not going to have the concentration and the urgency needed until you begin to have a larger vision than your own individual good. Buddhists in general, such as the Dalai Lama, the Tibetan Buddhists specifically, really make a great point of this, dedicate all the benefits of their spiritual practice to the liberation of all beings from suffering. What's your vision? What's your vision of what you want for this world and for all beings in it? People, all living beings, animals, plants, all objects, all things. What do you want to bring about? Start to describe for yourself what that vision of a world free from discord is for you. If you don't do this, this is not a threat, but one of the things that teachers in many traditions say, as you begin to broaden your intent, as you begin to include more and more beings in your compassionate vision, that you discover more energy and more urgency and more ability to give your attention and your activity to improving the conditions, the life that we are living, to improving the common good. Why is it so? Why does it require, in some sense, that we go beyond just our individual good? Well, as you know, many of you in this tradition, we say we are one. But what that really means is that we are much more than individuals. My favorite phrase, I must say it practically every time I talk, we are not skin-encapsulated egos, as Alan Watts once said. That actually, in our very being, there is more than what we call ourselves, have called ourselves. Ernest Holmes said it this way, while we have one common source, divine wisdom has seen fit to make each an individual. Unity does not mean uniformity. There is unity at the center with infinite variation at the circumference. Again, pause there for a moment. Bring that image in. If you have another image that talks about how the one and the many are the same, bring that forth too. What we're really saying is that there is this common source at the very center of our being. Seemingly separate, we're actually connected, deeply connected. We cannot unconnect. William James, one of the philosophers who influenced this movement greatly, described it this way. We are like islands in the sea, separate on the surface, but connected in the deep. Can you feel that? That's your current state of being. That's actually what's going on right now. That's what you call yourself. There is never real separation. There's no way to do that. We're always connected to one another and to everything at the very center of our being. We are one being, and many of us call it God, but you can choose your name for it. Rumi, my companion, Islamic poet, yours too, lived in the 13th century, but when he writes, actually speaks, something comes alive. And this is a translation by Coleman Barks, but I love this poem, and it's talking about what we're talking about right now. Far beyond ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. At the very center of our being, the world is beyond intimacy, beyond other, beyond ideas, beyond talking. There is a world within us where we are always together. Always one. And this field is that common ground, that same consciousness from which the common good arises. Ernest Holmes called it mind. The mind which you can use, which you use, is the mind which I use. It is the mind which everyone uses. It is the mind of God. Stop a second. The mind that you're using, the mind that I'm using, is the same mind. It is the one mind. It is what you are understanding with right now. It is what you have called yourself all these years. It's actually the one mind living as you. Therefore, the mind which you can use, which you use, and which is your mind now, is the God mind in you. This mind is in all people, envelops all, and is at the center of everything. We are in touch with and can influence each other by what we think within, because we are together within, and that thinking is the thinking taking place of the one mind, looking like you thinking it. This is the very basis of how we do prayer in this tradition, Science of Mind. Our practitioners pray on this basis, believing that there is one mind common to all individuals. The spiritual mind practitioner realizes that no matter where the clients are, they may be reached and helped. In this process, practitioners think within themselves with the clients. We can help each other. We can know the truth for each other beyond the limitations of space and time, because we share the same mind. This is a very, very important thing to realize, to begin to operate on. In fact, it's so important that reality itself is desperate that we know this, that what we do, each one of us individually, in fact, is felt by and has an effect on all of being. Ernest Holmes. All nature conspires to produce and manifest the freedom of the individual, that it may unloose its own energy. Your freedom, and we're talking about freedom of all kinds, freedom of expression, freedom of movement, freedom from discord, is vital to the universe because it needs to be able to, let's just say, vibrate fully in all of its parts. And that's what we are and why the universe conspires, that we should be free from fear and doubt and worry and poverty, illness, freedom from limitation of any sort, anything which imprisons your spirit. So nature itself is actively conspiring to manifest your freedom, your ability. So how do we help this conspiracy succeed? How do we join the conspiracy? Here's a suggestion. Give up beliefs that you and I have that require resisting the help of nature itself, of God itself, of reality itself. Here's an example of a belief. I have to do this myself. You know, the first level is nobody can do it as good. The second level is nobody's going to do it if I don't. And the third is fate itself has said, you got to do this. Nobody else. You're going to have to do it. And there's a hidden belief here. It says, I have to earn my good. I've got to earn my place on this planet. I've got to be worthy of something. I have to create, or otherwise my good won't come. And beneath that kind of belief, there's that feeling which is so prevalent. Beneath that is the idea that I don't really deserve my good because I'm not the person I think I should be. That's all nonsense. It's all mind chatter. It's not the one mind doing the thinking. It's you imagining you're not the one mind doing the thinking. And then we build our lives based on proving that we're worth something, that we can produce something or overcome something. I once knew a man who had a lifelong phobia of driving. And then through therapeutic treatment, suddenly no longer had that fear. It was amazing. He was feeling great freedom. He would get into the car and just go wherever he wanted. It was transforming. But then he began to notice a problem. He really no longer had a way to measure how good he was doing by overcoming his fears. He no longer had a way to measure his courage. He no longer had a way to congratulate himself on, hey, you're doing well. Because he didn't have that impediment anymore. He used his resistance to measure his strength. I think we often equate our strength with how well we could resist. So if you don't have to struggle, how would you know your strength? How would you know your worth? We have to stop looking for a fight in order to prove our strength. Begin to go beyond trying to do it yourself. Begin to ask for help. Ernest Holmes was asked once if he prayed for everything, even a loaf of bread. And he said, you know, I really don't know for that which creates everything, spirit, whether creating a loaf of bread is any more or less difficult than creating the peace of a planet. He said, I can't tell the difference. I really don't know. So if something comes up in my life that I need to have present in my life, then I just simply pray for it. because it's equally the same for spirit. Begin to open yourself to the truth that it isn't you who produces something, or it isn't the you you think you are that produces something, but it is the divine one as you that is continuously creating and moving all things. This is what we are. This is who we are. We begin to ask for help. We begin to look beyond the limited conditions of our ability, of our description and story of ourselves. And we begin to allow Spirit to give us everything we need. You can say it's inspiration. You can say it's intuition. You can say it's some kind of gift given to you by the world. But the truth is, you're turning to your source. You're turning to your larger being in order to be able to do any and everything. Ralph Waldo Emerson had a great image that I enjoy a lot. He said, man is a stream whose source is hidden. Our being is descending into us from we know not whence. I am constrained every moment to acknowledge a higher origin for events than the will I call mine. We have to shift our idea of what's going on, of who's doing what. We have to understand that everything that we do, everything that we do when we are helping to bring forth that world of the common good, the freedom from discord, the liberation from suffering, that it's all coming from that one, from Spirit, from Buddha, from Allah, from God. And we have to allow it to flow through us. We have to allow it to become the very source of our energy and our being and our inspiration, our sense of what's possible. When you let yourself be who you are, no longer putting your story on you, but begin to allow that stream of energy descend on you, flow through you, and recognize it, because it's going on all the time anyway. Begin to recognize and feel it. When you do that, then the common good is coming into being. Because the common good is indeed that desire and that wish for everyone and everything to be free from discord, to be free from suffering. You fill in the blank. To be free from, to be free to, whatever way you have a vision of the common good, begin to realize then that the song that Christopher was singing, which is, this is my last song, this is what I want to leave. Actually, you don't have to wait. You're doing it now. When you begin to invigorate within yourself an image of what the world can be, far beyond your sense of possibility, far beyond your sense of any way that it's going to come about, but begin to follow the intuitions of your heart. Is the common good for you a world in which love is present everywhere? Do you think that's possible? Don't put up all of the mind screens. Your heart calls for love. Your heart calls for peace. And it is in the heart that you'll find that description of the common good that we've been talking about. Understand that as we're talking right now, this mind that we share is alive with the possibility of something greater than we have yet known. That each one of us is right now receiving that stream of hidden energy. each one of us right now is turning away from ideas of limitation to ideas of possibility. And then the peace of a planet is possible. And remember that it's your mind and my mind which are together bringing forth that which is in the one mind, which is our being and source. And in so doing, you are right now establishing the common good in a new way, bringing it alive, bringing forth a vision like the vision of the Declaration of Independence is far, far beyond the common worldly understanding of what is possible. Let Spirit show you the way and what to do and give you the energy and the opportunity and the willingness and the ability to do it. Please join me in prayer. This mind right now in which we are hearing and understanding this word, this is the one mind. Right now, in each person here, at the very center of their being, that which they have called themselves, that which understands the word, that which feels its meaning, that which knows and responds. That's the one mind living as each one here. So, in that awareness, everyone here is the activity of, the action of, the movement of the Divine One in this moment, right now, not someday, but right now. So in that awareness, I speak this word and I say that we are each of us finding within ourselves new resources, greater resources. We're finding new possibility. We're finding and releasing old limiting beliefs. We are right now putting ourselves into the stream of power, that stream that descends upon us from we know not where, that stream that is invisible, eternal, and ever-present. And it carries in it everything that we need to make our next movement, to walk out of this room, to go through this day, to move through this month and week and life. All of it is done by that one. And we are simply releasing our ideas and our requirements of what can and can't be and saying, I'm here, pour through me. It is with gratitude that I recognize what's going on. And I simply release this word, knowing that it is doing its work right now. And so it is.